Chapter 14. Things were looking up for Nadashe Nohamapitan. To begin with, she'd taken out some trash in the form of Drusen Wolf and Kiva Lagos. But also, and at the moment this was the thing she was luxuriating in, she had a new address. She had been sprung from the dank, fetid confines of the Our Love Couldn't Go On and was now residing on the White Spats and Lots of Dollars. It, like the Our Love, was an in-system trader craft. Unlike the Our Love, the White Spats didn't require antibiotics just to look at the thing. The White Spats had been a lease, and now that the lease was up, it had been returned to the House of Wu to be reconditioned before being leased once more. As it was between leases, it was off the roster of ships tracked for commercial use. Proster Wu had flagged it for temporary personal duty, a prerogative of senior House of Wu executives for off-lease ships, and berthed it at the Wu family personal dock complex, where no imperial inspector or assessor would ever trouble it. Unless it moved out of dock, it was effectively invisible. Nadashe was delighted. The White Spats was clean and modern, and the previous leaseholder had configured it to hold passengers as well as cargo, so her living quarters were no longer clad in groaning discolored metal and occasional spots of mold. Proster Wu had populated the ship with a skeleton crew of technicians and domestics, all gleaned from the Countess Nohamapitan's still-in-system fiver, which had been confiscated when she was arrested for treason and murder. Nadashe accepted their fealty as acting head of her house, and then in true Nohamapitan fashion, proceeded to forget they existed, unless she wanted something specific from them. Living, even temporarily, on the sufferance of the Wu family did have its downsides, however, as Nadashe was reminded when her suite was invaded by Proster Wu, who entered without preamble or indeed so much as a knock. "You murdered Drusen Wolf," he said. "Not I," Nadashe said mildly. She was sitting idly on a chaise longue, flipping through the tablet. "I was here the entire time. I have witnesses." "You cannot go about murdering your allies. That's how they stop being your allies. You need all of your allies. We need them." Nadashe set her tablet down. "Well, Proster, there are two ways of explaining what happened to our dear friend Drusen Wolf. The first is that I did not have him murdered. As it happens, when this is looked into by the various law enforcement sorts who will invariably look into these things, mail will be discovered that reveals Drusen Wolf had lured Kiva Lagos to that park in order to have her assassinated. The two of them had recent contentious business dealings, after all. Bring her out into the park. Have a wandering hitman pop her in the head. We're done. Except for the fact that Wolf is dead." Nadashe shrugged. "A bump. A jostle. This is what you get for hiring cut-rate assassins." "And you expect anyone in the world to believe that?"
"I expect law enforcement to believe it, yes," Nadashe said. "You give them a simple answer, they'll take it every time. It's so much less work. And the simplest answer is usually the correct one. The trail is there. Wolf verifiably ordered a hit on Kiva Lagos. Then he rather unfortunately got in the way."
"I hope his contractor had already gotten paid. Coming back for the second half of his payment would be awkward." Proster Wu did not look in the least impressed. "That's one way of looking at it. You said there was another."
"The other way of looking at it is that Drusen Wolf went out of his way to gloat to Kiva Lagos that she was going to get hers, which inspired her to find out what he was up to, implicating several other houses and me, and you, Proster, in the bargain. Kiva Lagos is the very last person you want to cross, because she's smart and she'll punch you in the throat if you piss her off. And that's exactly what she did to Drusen Wolf. She maneuvered him right where she wanted him and made him jump through her hoops."
Nadashe stretched on her chaise longue. "She had to go, obviously, but he had to go too, to tie up loose ends and seal off leaks, but also to remind our people that they have to stay focused. There will be time for settling personal scores after the coup, as Emperor. I will encourage all their petty vendettas as reward for their service,
But not until after Greyland is gone and I am sitting in the Imperial Palace. So you're sending a message. I'm not doing anything, Nadashe said. Like I said, but if any fearful and paranoid allies take a lesson from this and make an extra effort not to do anything stupid between now and when the coup happens, then that's a good thing, isn't it? She shrugged. It's a cheap lesson, in any event. The House of Wolf isn't significant to our plans. They're a minor house. And now we have the benefit of Kiva Lagos out of the picture, and the House of Nohama Peton that much closer to being back in family control, which is going to be simpler for me when the time comes.
So what do you want me to tell our allies? Because they are already howling to me about it.
Tell them whatever you like, but make the point to them that if Drusen Wolf had kept his mouth shut, had not felt the need to crow to someone who uncovered what he was up to as easily as you or I might tie our shoes, he wouldn't be dead right now. That would be the case, no matter which of the two scenarios you believe happened. You might also remind our allies that Drusen's bragging led Kiva Lagos to finding out about their involvement as well. If Kiva hadn't had that falling out with Greyland, Drusen's indiscretion would mean we'd all already be awaiting our treason trials. Nadashe paused. Well, they would. As would you, Proster.
I wasn't in any of Lagos's documents, Proster said. Nadashe smiled.
I think it's delightful you think our allies, as you call them, wouldn't sell you out the instant they were caught.
I see your point.
I thought you might.
You think the falling out between Lagos and Greyland was real, then?
No one in our little club is in jail. Greyland's last roundup of traitors doesn't suggest she wastes any time holding them off when she learns about them. And Kiva is an asshole, so I can see anyone getting tired of her quickly.
That's a yes, then.
I'm not worrying about Kiva Lagos anymore, Nadashe said.
She picked her tablet back up.
I have other things I'm focused on. Our so-called allies should be focusing on other things as well.
Proster picked up that he had been dismissed and left her on her chaise longue. In truth, Nadashe had not been so nearly sanguine as she had suggested to Proster about Kiva Lagos. She wasn't convinced Kiva hadn't been trying to play double agent with Drusen Wolf. When Wolf had come to her with the news that Kiva wanted in on their plans, she had nearly pushed him into an airlock and cycled it, fraught as she was with worry and fear. Inwardly, of course, it wouldn't do to let someone like Drusen Wolf know what she was actually thinking. It had taken a couple of days to have her people deliver the documents that suggested it was as Kiva had represented it. Greyland had gotten tired of dealing with Kiva's ass and found a way to push her out. This delighted Nadashe, because she had come to loathe Kiva Lagos. She respected Kiva, and she worked hard not to underestimate her. And she was well aware that although Kiva was a formidable opponent, as the all-too-large number of frozen supposedly hidden financial accounts made clear, she could also be a formidable ally, with inside knowledge of the Imperial household to boot. But at the end of the day, Nadashe just couldn't take Kiva. Her confidence, her vulgarity, her outer layer of complete anarchy, masking a weirdly inflexible inner layer of morality. Also, the fact that Kiva had banged her brother Granny senseless in college made Nadashe feel queasy, although Granny was never the most discerning person in terms of partners. Nadashe and Kiva would never be allies. It was a shame, Nadashe thought. When Drusen Wolf had revealed his gaffe and Kiva's attempt to capitalize on it, Nadashe didn't waste more than a second thinking about his fate. He was going to have to die, and the sooner the better. But in spite of everything, Nadashe had to think about what to do with Kiva. For as much as she loathed her, and had no doubt that Kiva felt the same about Nadashe, it seemed almost a waste to give her the same fate as Drusen Wolf. Wolf would not be missed for even the amount of time it took him to hit the ground. Kiva would, for at least slightly longer. Still, Nadashe couldn't have Kiva out in the world being a chaos agent just by dint of existing. Kiva had to be removed from the playing board. Nadashe removed her and thought herself wise to do so. Not for the first time, Nadashe wondered in an abstract way if there was something not quite right about her. If one were to list out her deeds over the last several years, one would suggest they were the acts of a sociopath. She had, after all, helped foment a civil war, attempted to assassinate the Emperor not once but twice, the second time killing her own brother as collateral damage, participated in a coup and was fomenting another one, and, in the last few weeks, taken out a small handful of nobility. On paper, these were not the deeds of a nice or moral person. Nadashe did not worry about being nice. Nice was for other people, the people who didn't have power or a plan to get it when they didn't have it. Nadashe could never recall being nice in the generic sense of the term. Polite? Certainly. Respectful when appropriate or necessary. Nice? No. Nice felt like an abdication, like an admission of defeat, like someone who was a supplicant rather than a superior or, at least, a peer. Maybe if you were nice, you would have been married to an emperor already and all this would have been unnecessary, a voice inside her head said to her, a voice that sounded almost exactly like her mother. Nadashe had been the intended fiancé of Renarid Wu, crown prince of the Interdependency, until she wasn't, because it turned out that Renarid didn't want a partner so much as he wanted a compliant doormat. A nice, compliant doormat. Nadashe was willing to deal with a lot to be the imperial consort, but not that. And so, here we were. And maybe her mother didn't like that, but then she had killed Renarid by sabotaging his race car and then tried to depose the current emperor. So maybe she wasn't the best person to lecture anyone on nice. So, nice was not in Nadashe's personal vocabulary, but moral was. Nadashe was aware that killing people and fomenting coups were not the usual hallmarks of a moral person, at least not in isolation. But Nadashe believed strongly that there was a context for her acts. The first was the context of the Nohama-Petan family, which was objectively a superior line, not in some ridiculous eugenic way, but in the consistent influence and importance of the family and its house going back to the earliest days of the Interdependency, when the Nohama-Petans were one of the first families to align themselves with the Wus. The Wus, and the imperial line in particular, had lost their way more than once. Indeed, that was the problem with the current emperor, who, if not for an accident, well, accident, would be at best a middle-tier academic in some distant system, well away from the halls of power. It was why Proster Wu agreed to sit Nadashe on the throne. He knew it was time for someone to be there who had the courage to do the hard things, and that there was no one in the Wu family, him not excepted, ready to step up for that. As part of the bargain, Nadashe had promised to marry a Wu and to have her heir bear that family name when everything settled and there was a new empire based in the End System. And who knows, Nadashe thought, she might even do that. Beyond the Nohama-Petan family itself, there was the matter of the interdependency and what it really was. Greyland, who had lived her entire life outside of the nobility and the guilds, thought the interdependency was its people, all of its people, a multicellular thing with billions of indispensable cells, none of which would survive without all of the others. This was ridiculous and also futile. There was no way to save every single cell in this vast organism, and it was a waste of time to try. Someone had to be willing to sacrifice the body to save what was important, the brain and heart of the interdependency, the nobility and their monopolies, and the guilds that had sprung up to service both. That the interdependency existed at all is because the Wus and the Nohama-Petans and other noble families had made it so. As long as they existed, the idea of the interdependency and the structure of it would survive and in time would thrive in its new home on End. That was what was important. Nadashe understood, again mostly abstractly, that the billions of people who would die with the collapse of the flow would not be impressed with her reasoning and with her determination to focus on the nobility, guilds, and capital. But the fact of the matter was, they were going to die anyway. There was no way to save them all. There was no way to save even more than the tiniest fraction of them. Nadashe didn't see the point in wasting time worrying about them. The nobles were a vastly smaller number of people to contend with. They understood the value of saving themselves. They were the ones who had the majority of capital. They also understood the real politic issues they were confronting, which was that the vast majority of people in the interdependency were going to die, but that the nobles didn't have to, as long as they were willing to pay the Nohamapetans for access to End. It was simply the cost of doing business in the new paradigm. And in doing so, they would save the interdependency. Nadashe would save the interdependency. In the end, that was the highest morality. And if, on the way there, Nadashe herself had to do some questionable things, well, that was also the cost of doing business in the new paradigm. So, no, Nadashe thought, there was nothing wrong about her at all. She was strong and moral and courageous in a way that history would understand. In a not-at-all-facetious way, Nadashe thought herself not unlike Raquel I, the first emperor of the interdependency. Wash away the myth-making of the Church of the Interdependency and various fawning historians, and you see a woman who had made difficult choices for the good of an entire society. Because those choices had to be made. There would be no interdependency without those choices, and without Raquel I. Nadashe had a fleeting thought that when she became emperor, her imperial name should also be Raquella, to make that connection explicit. She dismissed the idea almost as quickly. It would be a little on the nose, and also, with a new home for the interdependency at End, it made sense not to look into the past. Emperor Nadashe I would do just fine. Yes, indeed, things were looking up for Nadashe Nohamapetan. There was a ping on Nadashe's tablet, signaling that one of her staff was requesting access to her suite. Nadashe let them enter.
The Countess Raphaelia Mason Persaud of the House of Persaud is here to see you, ma'am.
Perfect, Nadashe said. Prepare a tea service, and then bring her in.